Today is Fidel Castro's funeral. In the 1950s, Fulgencio Batista ruled Cuba as the dictator, occasionally allowing rigged elections. Batista and the ruling elite of Cuba thrived on American bribes, turning their island into a Caribbean Las Vegas. The population lived short, cruel lives with the highest infant mortality rate and the lowest literacy rate in the hemisphere. After one particularly obviously fixed election, a young upstart lawyer named Fidel Castro challenged the results. When that failed, Castro set his mind on orchestrating a revolution. He joined a group that laid siege to the Moncada barracks, hoping to gain access to the armory and to arm the Cuban people, toppling the Batista regime. Moncada failed, and Castro was sent to prison for life. At his sentencing, Castro issued a firebrand declaration that concluded with a prescient prediction that history would vindicate him. After years in prison, Castro was released when someone bribed Batista, and Castro was sent into exile in Mexico, where he met up with a revolutionary Cuban expatriate group and an Argentine named Che Guevara. Castro immediately set his mind again to toppling Batista. Castro's crew attempted to buy a PT boat so they could sail to Cuba and undertake guerrilla warfare, but the deal for the boat fell through. With no other options, the group purchased a yacht from a Cuban expat retired in Mexico. Castro and friends crammed more than 100 people onto that yacht with food and water for the journey. The plan was to rendezvous with a contingent in Cuba who would have weapons waiting on the beach. But nobody checked the weather first, so they sailed directly into a hurricane. Because the yacht was sailing so heavy with more than 100 people, it took on water. The salt water shorted out the electricity, killing all navigation and refrigeration. So they sailed blind, and all their food spoiled. In the days that Castro and his crew sailed in circles out in the ocean, patrols discovered the contingent on the Cuban beach and arrested them and confiscated all their guns. The Cuban military waited in ambush. When Castro's crew finally figured out where they were and sailed toward Cuba, they were starving and dehydrated and hurricane-weary. As they approached the island, planes flew over, dropping bombs. Soldiers fought. In response, the revolutionaries panicked and ran aground on a sandbar, stranded 100 yards from shore. So under fire and with bombs dropping from the sky, the 100-plus guerrillas dove into the ocean and swam for the beach. In the chaos that followed, most of the survivors ran up the beach and into the jungle and found their way back to their respective homes, resuming their non-revolutionary lives. But not all. A local farmer discovered a handful of cold and shivering, hungry people wandering in the jungle around his farm. Since it was raining season, the farmer brought those wandering guerrillas to his barn and gave them food and blankets. There were 12 of them. They had 4 operable firearms between them and very little ammunition. They were exhausted and cold and wet, and their leader, the brains of this operation, was a failed revolutionary who had already been sent to prison once and had sailed them into a hurricane and into a sandbar and into failure after failure. There, in that barn, the 12 of them had to decide what to do moving forward. They decided to load their 4 weapons and wage irregular warfare against a mechanized and technologically advanced military of 80,000 soldiers that had the full backing of the United States government. 18 months later, Fulgencio Batista fled Havana and went into exile with a suitcase full of cash. What began with 12 shivering, hapless dreamers in a barn ended with the toppling of a tyrant. The significance of the Cuban Revolution is that at no time did the guerrilla forces number more than 5,000. It occurred just miles off of the shore of Florida. And, as an example for us, the Cuban Revolution proved that we don't have to wait for conditions in order to instigate or provoke rebellion. That once an insurrection begins, it becomes contagious. What Castro and those revolutionaries accomplished in ousting a dictator can be duplicated by Zapatistas in Mexico, or Sandinistas in Nicaragua, or by you and me right here, right now. Political violence works. Want to change the world? You only need 12 guerrillas, 4 guns, and a yacht. Now, all that said, Castro was a hierarch. So after leading the rebellion that successfully ousted a dictator, Castro ceased being a guerrilla and assumed the swivel chair behind the former dictator's desk. As a head of state, Castro can be criticized for political repression and for not allowing elections, although much of that was influenced greatly by the constant threat of U.S. interference and sabotage. Had Castro permitted free elections, the CIA would have funded an electoral coup. But Castro, the head of state, is not the example that speaks to all of us. I think we can easily distinguish between Castro the guerrilla, who opposed the existing power through political violence, and the later disappointing Castro, who became the existing power. Castro the rebel stared down a ruthless terror state and declared that history would vindicate him. May history vindicate us as well. This is anarchist prisoner Sean Swain from Warren Correctional Institution, Lebanon, Ohio. If you're listening, you are the resistance.
You can write to Sean Swain at Sean Swain 243-205, Warren CI, P.O. Box 120, 5787 State Route 63, Lebanon, Ohio 45036. For updates on his situation and more writings by Sean can be found at seanswain.org.